I should probably just draw on a corner of the room the big picture before I get into details. I already drew this picture in a few seminars ago, so I'll just go quickly over it. So we have four-dimensional n equal 4 super Yamils. And three-dimensional boundary condition, boundary conditions. Which preserve three-dimensional n equal 4 supersymmetry. So let me call the gauge group of this theory G and the boundary conditions B. So it's well known that n equal 4 super Yamils has an S duality. Which relates the gauge theory with some gauge group and the gauge theory with the Langland dual group at inverse values of the coupling. In many situations, you can sort of also think about as dual boundary conditions. Meaning, after you equip your theory with a boundary condition, you might hope to find the dual boundary condition so that these two systems are related as you switch the sign, as you invert the coupling. Now, the geometric Langland duality has to do with compactifications to the four-dimensional theory on a Riemann surface. So when you compactify the four-dimensional Yamils theory on a Riemann surface, you get a two-dimensional theory. With eight supercharges, it's a sigma model into some space, which is the Hitchian modulus space. And the S duality between these two theories becomes the Emiro symmetry between the corresponding two-dimensional sigma models. When you put the boundary condition in the game, you can sort of make some choice of how to align the supersymmetries preserved by boundary condition and the supersymmetries preserved by the compactification on the Riemann surface. So essentially, there end up being two choices, which give you two different type of boundary conditions for the sigma model. So here I have a M Hitchin G C plus a BBB boundary condition. I'll explain later what that means. And here you have the same sigma model, but the boundary condition is of a different type. If you do the same thing for the dual theory, you're also going to get two different boundary conditions. Let me call these ones I'll leave it as that, but picking good names in this business is not always easy. So the statement is that Miro symmetry is going to relate the BBB boundary condition you obtain from this and the BAA you get from this, and it's going to relate is true as well. Now, BBB and BAA boundary conditions have some very specific description in mathematical language. At least they're expected to have a specific description in the mathematical language. So these ones in the mathematical language should be related to something called the derived category of coherent sheaf. Quasi-coherent sheaves, sheaves, That's right. Maybe complex sets of sheaves. Coherent, quasi-coherent, some type of sheaves. On the space of flat connections, of GC flat connection on C. Flat complexified connections for this group on the Riemann surface. Yes, C is a Riemann surface. On the other hand, this is supposed to give you complexes of D modules but perhaps I should just say complexes with a flat connection or complexes of D modules. I don't know what the best way to think about it. On the space of G bundle or G dual bundles on C. Okay. So, and this these categories are supposed to be in correspondence, and out of boundary conditions in four dimensions, you are supposed to get corresponding objects in these categories. So this correspondence is geometric Langlands. My hope is to get objects in geometric, pairs of objects in geometric Langlands out of the boundary conditions in four dimensions. Okay. But before I get there, let me start from something a bit simpler. Because there is always a lot of tension between the dictionary you might use in physics and the dictionary you might want to use in math. And it's helpful to establish the dictionary a bit more carefully. So think about some quantum field theory with a boundary condition. So how do we think about that? Well, if to think about a quantum field theory, you might have something like an action, you know, a Lagrangian, perhaps, depending on some fields. You have some manifold, or different dimensions, and you're integrating some Lagrangian, which is a function of some bulk fields. Okay? Let's say just Rd. Okay, this is what a physicist would think about as a beginning of a definition of a quantum field theory, at least weakly coupled quantum field theory. If you want to define a quantum field theory with a boundary condition, you might say, okay, I put a boundary, and then maybe I allow myself to also add some fields that live at the boundary. Some terms in the action which are integrated over the boundary. These terms might include the bulk fields, and perhaps they will include a whole bunch of new fields that just live at the boundary. Okay. Morally speaking, the space of possible boundary conditions for this theory, at least the ones that you can write like that, is the space of possible boundary theories, you know, sort of D minus one dimensional Lagrangians, which have a slot in which you can insert about the bulk fields. Okay? And all of these complicated things are just ways to describe one-dimensional Lagrangians with certain slots and topologically, for some topologically twisted theory. The sort of things that you can put as a boundary to build the boundary conditions. So ultimately you want to talk about one-dimensional boundary conditions for two-dimensional systems. So let's talk about one-dimensional system, one-dimensional things. The simplest situation where this sort of constructions occur is where the four-dimensional, the two-dimensional theory has perhaps 2, 2 supersymmetry and can be topologically twisted to a nice topological feature in two dimensions, not like an A model or a B model. And then the boundary condition will be described as some one-dimensional auxiliary system with 2 supercharges. So we should try to talk about supersymmetric quantum mechanics with 2 supercharges and appropriate slots that allow them to be coupled to two-dimensional fields.
So usually, in the bulk, we restrict to local field theories. Is there a good reason that it should be also local in these little pies?
Yeah, absolutely. I want a local boundary condition. It has satisfied all the properties of a, you know, it's this situation where I have bulk local operators, boundary local operators. Locality works just in the same way. The only point is that the stress tensor exists in the bulk and not, there is no, typically no boundary stress tensor. Okay, so what is the supersymmetric quantum mechanics? It's some, to give a supersymmetric quantum mechanics, I need to give you 2 ingredients. I need to give you some Hilbert space. And I need to give you a supercharge, a Grassmann-Nod operator. With Q squared equal to 0. And then I can get the joint operator, Q dagger, which is also square to 0. And define an Hamiltonian as the anticommutator of Q and Q dagger.
You don't want a unitary structure, right?
So I'm not doing physics. At some point I'll switch to math. But I'm doing physics, so I have a quantum mechanics. A Hilbert space.
But the boundary quantum mechanics need not be unitary, right?
Well, I would prefer it to be if I'm doing physics. And this I have a quantum field theory, you know, unitary quantum field theory. I'm trying to describe a nice, good physical boundary condition.
Yes, but the information can flow out from the boundary. So the boundary by itself, which has a slot, won't be unitary.
It will be. No, as I'm saying, this system, this whole system is unitary. The system where this is taken to be some constants is also unitary. Of course, if you make these background fields, it's still unitary. And then you make them dynamical, and this whole system is still unitary.
Yeah. A priori, you could ask that just the fixed capital phi, the right-hand integral defines some sort of quantum field theory, and that would be different than asking just that the whole thing be kind of a well-defined thing, right?
True, there can be anomalies and things like that. I'm not worried about them here. They can be incorporated in the discussion. So supersymmetric quantum mechanics is a quantum mechanics, first of all, so it has a Hilbert space and a Hamiltonian, possibly positive definite. Well, it is going to be automatically positive definite. A supercharge, which squares to zero, and such a QQ dagger gives you the Hamiltonian. Now, if you look at the spectrum of such a Hamiltonian, you typically find pairs of states of non-zero energy, which are mapped into each other by the supercharges. And then at zero energy, you might find some states which are not paired up. So there will be some ground states which are killed by Q and Q dagger, and so have zero energy. Okay. Now, when you try to go in a topologically twisted setup, essentially you're going to do things like cohomology of Q, which means that everything that does not have zero energy goes away, and only these ones survive. And indeed, the supersymmetric ground states are in one-to-one correspondence with the cohomology of Q. So if you're just thinking about one quantum mechanics, supersymmetric quantum mechanics, from the point of view of the topologically twisted theory, you could just say, okay, it's a vector space of ground states. That's it. Boring, perhaps. Or you could choose to cut it off as some non-zero energy and keep everything below some energy. And then you get some complex, some finite dimensional vector space with a differential. But at the end, you just want to look at the cohomology of this differential, which is back this. Of course, the space of quantum supersymmetric, in a sense, morally speaking, the space of supersymmetric quantum mechanics form a category. You can think about different quantum mechanics as the objects of the category. And then you can look at local operators that sort of interpolate between quantum mechanics and the next, and which commute to the supercharge. Maybe. Or even don't. Okay. You can just look at all possible ways to connect a quantum mechanic to the next, and call this the space of morphisms in these quantum mechanics. And again, there is the supercharge. In a topologically twisted situation, the only things that you really care about are the ones that are going to commute to the supercharge, you know, so that Q1 O is O Q2, which behave like sort of chain maps between these complexes. Okay, but still, it's pretty boring, right? It still looks like a category of vector spaces, pretty much a match between vector spaces. But things become more interesting if you put some slots. In other words, suppose that you have now a quantum mechanics which has parameters. To be concrete, I'll say that my quantum mechanics depends on some parameter x. Say that x is a point in C, for example. Could be some point in some other space, in some manifold. We call this manifold X. And let's say that Q depends holomorphically on X. So del bar X, Q vanishes. It's easy to build things like that. Now, as I vary X, my spectrum will move around. It's perfectly possible for pairs of states to come up from the ground states and disappear, or come down and become ground states. So the dimension of the space of ground states might jump as I move around on my parameter space. You know, I might have, say, a parameter space where almost everywhere the space of ground states is one, say, but perhaps there's some special point, the special ground states becomes 3, you know, or 5. Okay. But what can it? One thing I can do is to say, okay, I'll pick a cutoff, some cutoff mu. And anywhere I am, and you know, I just ignore everything that is above that cutoff. So now my parameter space will have patches. So now looking at the Hilbert space with energy smaller than mu. So I'll have patches because occasionally some pairs of states will still enter or exit my cutoff. So in each patch, I'll have some some vector space with a differential given by the supercharge. The vector space is my jump as I move around, but the cohomology of the differential is actually the same. More precisely, I'll have chain maps between. So I have vector bundles of some fixed dimension in each patch, which are the space of state, the bundle of states with a certain energy. And then I have maps between these vector bundles, which preserve the cohomology. Any supersymmetric quantum mechanics with parameter space X will give me a picture like this. Okay. Now, if I remember correctly, this is something called a perfect complex on X. So supersymmetric quantum mechanics with parameter space X, from the point of view of topologically twisted person, are mapped into perfect complexes on X. Yeah, I'm assuming that this quantum mechanics is a discrete spectrum with a finite dimensional spatial ground states. This is typically what happens in a well-defined system. If you have a continuum, this so good supersymmetric quantum mechanics. will give what I think are called perfect complexes. And the perfect complexes on a space are one of the possible incarnations, so that the right category of coherent sheaves on the space, which are the way mathematicians describe B-brains. So this complicated mathematical object that makes you scared every time you look at literature on B-brains is just a fancy name for low energy effective quantum mechanics on a parameter space. Now, very concretely, now you take your supersymmetric quantum mechanics with parameter X, and you can couple to an X sigma model in two dimensions. Okay. So you take your use your quantum mechanics as this blob, and you couple it to a sigma model with target X. This whole thing is supersymmetric, preserves the correct number of supersymmetries and gives you a B-brain. So from supersymmetric quantum mechanics, you can get to B-brains. And there is also an inverse map from B-brains to supersymmetric quantum mechanics, which is given as follows. Suppose that somebody gives you some mysterious boundary condition B. Well, put the theory in a segment and put set your field to have some value x at the boundary. These are called the Dirichlet boundary conditions. This gives you effectively a supersymmetric quantum mechanics with parameter x. So there is there are maps that go both ways and are essentially inverse to each other. So this is not always the case, okay? And this is only true at the, you know, at the topologically twisted level. In principle, you know, coupling a system of boundary degrees of freedom to the bulk can change their physics a lot. Sometimes, even in the physical setup, there are couplings you can turn off to decouple the boundary to the, from the bulk. But that's not always the not usually the case. But in this sort of topologically twisted setup, you're often able to capture the boundary condition by the boundary degrees of freedom that produce it, and vice versa. Okay, so this was one type of supersymmetric quantum mechanics, and it gave us sheaves, okay? Complexes, perfect complexes, whatever. You know, sheaves of ground states which vary holomorphically on my space, just because the supercharge was holomorphic. Now, so this is one of the two. So as I said, this is the way mathematicians typically describe B-brains. Now I would like to discuss A-brains. Now, A-brains in general can be quite a scary subject. They can involve horrid things like Foucault categories or more. But A-brains in, at least certain A-brains in cotangent bundles are a bit simpler, and that's what I'm going to discuss. And they're described by something called D-modules, and I would like to understand physically why that is the case. So let's go back to the supersymmetric quantum mechanics. But now, I'm not requiring this to be holomorphic anymore. So let's give it another name. So before, this space X was some complex manifold, maybe Kähler, because I ultimately wanted to do a two-dimensional sigma B-type sigma model in it. Now instead I have some manifold Y, which is going to be just a manifold. Real, no complex structure. But I still want to have some control on how the supercharge varies as I change Y. So I'm going to require that the change of the supercharge as I vary Y is exact. And I probably want to put an, I don't want to put an I. Okay. Now, if I had put an I here, then Q dagger would have changed in the same way. The Hamiltonian would have changed in the same way. This would have been just a trivial change of the quantum mechanics. You know, just a redefinition of my Hilbert space. But I'm not putting an I, which means in a sense Q and Q dagger are changing in different ways, and the Hamiltonian actually changes. Possibly, yes. And I can have many y's, and if I have many y's, I might want the way the corresponding t's vary to also be related. So what I really want is to have operators, the y minus t y, which commute with each other and commute with a supercharge. Okay, so in a sense, I want a flat connection. I want on a certain flat connection on my, I want to treat my Hilbert space as a flat bundle on my manifold, where the flat connection commutes to the supercharge as a complexified flat connection. I can have many possible deformations of quantum mechanics. Some are better than others. Ultimately, the reason is that I'm going to be able to couple these to this sort of quantum mechanics with a QI, which satisfy these properties, can be coupled to an A model on T star of Y. Ultimately, that's why I'm interested in this quantum, in this kind of deformations of the quantum mechanics. And so you should think about what is typical in A brain for this, for T star Y is a Lagrangian manifold equipped with a flat connection. But suppose that your Lagrangian manifold is very close to the base of T star of Y. Then you can actually describe it by a complexified flat connection, where the unitary part is the connection, and the real part is sort of the Higgs field that tells you how you're deforming away from the base. I might have time to get back to this. For now, let's just say that this is what you need to ultimately couple this quantum mechanics to this sigma model. Essentially, what's going to happen, you're going to identify Y with the coordinates on the base, and you're going to set the coordinates on the fiber to equal T. And these constraints make it supersymmetric. So ultimately, we're going to put the boundary condition, which says, you know, the Lagrangian or the boundary theory depends on my coordinate phi on the base of Y, on the back field on the base of Y, and the fields along the fiber are going to be equal to T. Okay, and this is going to be a coupling of the. I mean, you can really write a Lagrangian. The point you can write a Lagrangian of this sort, which gives you these boundary conditions. So just let me just leave it at that. There is a way to couple this system to a sigma model on T star of Y. Or if you want, there is a canonical way to build a Hamiltonian on a half line, starting from this data, where here you have the sigma model in T star Y. So essentially what's going to happen now is that, again, if you repeat the story for Y, for this parameter space Y, you're going to have patches, and in each patch you'll have some finite dimensional vector bundle of the states below a certain energy. But now this bundle will be equipped with a flat connection. Flat connection which commutes to the differential and is compatible with the transition maps. Now, I don't know what is the correct name for this, but sort of perfect complex of the modules, or but this is, you know, this is going to be the derived category, some derived category of the modules. So again, there is a map from this to some A brains. In this star of Y, at least the ones that can essentially all A brains in this star of Y if you do things properly. And this should give you some category of the modules on Y. And this would be the mathematical description of A brains. Okay, so right, so these mathematical blobs are certain ways to describe, give an effect-oriented description of whatever boundary degrees of freedom I put in my system. Okay.
So that's the definition of a
D-model? I would send to the mathematicians to get what the correct definition of a D-module is, but essentially, as far as I understand, in the derived a D-module in the derived sense is a sheaf with an holomorphic differential. Sorry, with a differential in it, with a flat connection in it. I mean, it's the sheafy version of a vector bundle with a flat connection. Now, in this setup, there is twice as much supersymmetry. So this story, well, in the geometric Langland program in general, I think people are perfectly happy to just work with these objects, which physically will be boundary conditions to preserve two supercharges. But if you start from these beautiful three-dimensional boundary conditions and you go through, go down, you get boundary conditions to preserve four supercharges. So they have a bit more structure. So they don't give you the most general, you know, they give some very special objects in here, which are more supersymmetric. And I would love to know a good mathematical characterization of these objects. These are what I denote here as BBB brains or BAA brains. I should say at least a few words about that, if anything, as an invitation to develop the mathematical theory of these objects. So now I'm going to look at n equal 4 supersymmetric quantum mechanics. I have again a Hilbert space, but now I have two supercharges and their Hermitian conjugates. Which satisfy certain commutation relations with contained Hamiltonian on the right hand side. A good way to think about these commutation relations is that if you define Q1 plus zeta Q2, we call this Q zeta, where zeta is just some parameter in CP1, then Q zeta squared vanishes. In general, sort of you have a CP1 word of n equal 2 supersymmetric quantum mechanics, all with the same Hamiltonian. Okay. So Q1 squared is 0, Q2 squared is 0, Q1, Q2 is 0. But Q1, Q1 dagger gives you the Hamiltonian, but so does Q2 dagger, say. And then there is something about Q1, Q2 dagger equal to 0, and so on. So there is a whole bunch of relations And it's not quite clear to me what is the best way to think about these relations. But one fact which is definitely true is that it is sort of historical families of nilpotent supercharges. So you can always pick a zeta, forget about the extra structure, and say, and use that to define your topologically twisted system. But this will forget some of the structure. So the actual ground states, for example, are killed by all four supercharges now. But typically, they can be obtained as the cohomology of any of these Q-zetas. So it is not quite clear to me. Right, when I try to do some. It's not clear to me, for example, when to say that sure, the Zenikov four quantum mechanics are truly equivalent. You know, what replaces the notion of chain map, right? You want some operator or some collection of operators that behave, that commute Q zeta for all zeta. But I can think of many different ways to make this happen, right? I could have a single operator that commutes with both Q1 and Q2. Or I could have two operators, O1 and O2, such as O1 plus zeta O2 commutes with this. Or maybe something longer, right? So I don't know what is, and maybe all of these things are good. So I don't know how to think about this sort of N=4 supersymmetric quantum mechanics as a category. It's like a twister space of categories. And I think it's worth thinking of how to formalize in this notion. Now, which kind of deformations can we think about for this N=4 quantum mechanics? There are actually many, many different possibilities, but there are two that are particularly useful for what follows, which are the BBB and BAA possibilities. So I don't know which one to start from. Maybe I'll start from the BBB. So BBB brains are going to be boundary conditions for hyperkeller manifolds, for sigma models in hyperkeller manifolds. Probably you need a hyperkeller to from the topologically twisted point of view, just something like hyperholomorphic. You need something which has a whole CP1 worth of complex structures, so that there is a whole CP1 of del bar operators. For example, R4 is an hyperkeller manifold. And you can define del bar of, let's say that you write R4 as C2 with coordinates U and V. Then the usual antelomorphic derivatives will look like this, but you can deform them. To get a whole family of antelomorphic derivatives. Which correspond to different choices of complex structure on R4. So now what I'm going to require is that Q zeta depends holomorphically in complex structure zeta. So I can require the bar zeta q zeta to vanish. Now, if you expand it out, that means that the u derivative of q1 maybe will be maybe q1 will be holomorphic and q2 will be anti-holomorphic with some relations between the holomorphic derivatives of q1 and anti-holomorphic derivatives of q2. So this is one possibility. Now, this is called the BBB brain, simply because it gives you a B-type object, an holomorphic sheaf, in all complex structures. So after this supersymmetric quantum mechanics with parameter space X, you end up with a, for every choice of complex structure on X, you end up with this data that varies nicely as you vary the choice of complex structure. This is called BBB. BBB refers to the fact that you have a CP1 world of complex structures. There are three that people like particularly. Okay. And so this is B in all three. And I think it would be nice to understand what is the category of BBB brains. Right? Can we think about some twist, you know, twistorial perfect complexes or something like that? I don't know quite how to think about it, but it would be interesting. I could give example. This looks like a very tough condition, but I could give examples. Maybe I will give examples, but I just want to finish writing down some definitions. So this is the BBB. On the other hand, the BAA brains, okay, these are also going to be boundary conditions for some hyperkeller manifold, sigma more than an hyperkeller manifold. They just preserve a different type of supersymmetry. But ultimately, you don't really care much about the fact that it's hyperkeller. You want to think about the manifold essentially as the cotangent bundle of a complex manifold. And what we're going to ask for the supercharges is that they vary holomorphically on Y, and that the holomorphic derivative is exact. So we're going to combine the B and the A conditions. The holomorphic derivative of Q1 is Q2 exact. I'm really not saying this properly. I better just, I might be running a bit out of steam. I want something like, what I want is that it's something that is a D-type deformation of Q1, but is an A-type deformation of all the other Q zetas. A good way to say it is that there is So I can find two auxiliary operators, T and T bar, with a property that these two commute, the sort of two lax connections commute, and commute equals zeta. Okay. You see, for every zeta except zero, this means essentially these give you a sort of flat connection that is compatible with your differential. So it's an A-type brain boundary, A-type deformation. At zeta equal to zero, instead you sort of ignore these and ignore these. And what you get is an holomorphic Q, which happens to commute with an extra auxiliary operator. So this sort of deformation is what we can call a BAA deformation, and ends up giving you a BAA brain in T star Y. And if you, depending on, you can think about it as sort of a complex Lagrangian sum manifold in T star Y, which is morally speaking the spectral curve for this T. But I don't have time to go into that. So I'm sorry, you might feel a bit lost at this point, but I would just, trying to explain how this characterization BBB or BAA again means that we are talking about certain types of boundary degrees of freedom which are coupled to your system in a certain way, and presumably they belong to some category or some sort of mathematical structure which classifies all of this kind of extra data at the boundary. But when in the context of symmetric Langlands, people just set zeta equal to one, pick one of the supercharges, and just think about the data of a perfect complexes or sheaves, so the sort of n equal two data. But so here all they get is a sheaf on some space, and here what they get is a D module. Although the fact that it's a BAA brain, it's still remembered by the fact that this is an holomorphic D module. Okay. Now, we can stop here or take a break, and I can try to actually describe some of these boundary conditions. Okay, we're going to take a couple minutes break, which are sections of, so when I do the BAA twist, I will be able to couple. Okay, so this theory is coupled to G for the vector multiples. This includes the gauge fields and includes scalars and other degrees of freedom. Depending on the twist I do, some of these scalars and gauge fields configurations survive, meaning before twisting, I can couple my upper multiples to any background connection and any background value for these four-dimensional scalar fields. After the twist, I will only be able to couple it to supersymmetric configurations of the connection and the scalar fields, whatever those supersymmetric configurations are. So I start with this three-dimensional Lagrangian, which is a function of some hypermultiples. And the four-dimensional gauge fields and scalars. And after twisting on C, I'll end up with a one-dimensional Lagrangian, which have the hypermultiplets on C. And some configurations of the Fourier series on C. Ultimately, that would mean that my quantum mechanical system for the BAA case would be a function of G bundles. While my supersymmetric quantum mechanics for the BBB twist will be a function of G flat connections, complexified. OK? Just trust me on this, that the sort of the supersymmetric configurations of the four-dimensional gauge fields on C that contribute are either G bundles or G flat connections. So for that reason, once I twist my hypermultiples on, I'm going to get either a BBB brain on the space of flat connections or a BAA brain on the space of G bundles. And I want to describe the BAA brain. So I had my hypermultiplets cap. I want to describe the coupling of these hypermultiplets to the bundles. So the hypermultiplets are going to behave exactly like the chiral fields with the superpotential that I described a moment ago. The superpotential is going to look like this. The integral on C of Z del bar Z. So let me explain the expression. This was a symplectic representation, so I have a symplectic pairing. I use it to pair Z and the lantilomorphic derivative of Z. This, so my Z's are my one-dimensional degrees of freedom. And the antilomorphic derivative has the data of the G bundle. So this is a family of superpotentials parametrized by a G bundle. And I tell you, just take the D module for this superpotential. This is a big infinite dimensional horror, but and then we can try to give a more less infinite dimensional description of it. If I try to mimic the sort of simple e to the w, the w integral that I was discussing before, here I'm going to do an a path integral over C of e to the integral over C of Z del bar Z. And this is a well-known path integral. It's what defines the beta gamma system or symplectic bosons. Whoever is familiar with OPEs and vertex algebras would recognize that this path integral will give you fields which depend on holomorphically on points on your Riemann surface and have OPEs of this form. More generally, I would like to claim that the D module built out of this is simply the space of conformal blocks, perhaps in a derived sense, for this vertex algebra. Now, whenever I have a vertex algebra which has WZW currents, the conformal blocks are known to give you a D module on the space of bundles. Here, the WZW currents are simply the moment maps for Z. Symplectic representation have moment maps, which are quadratic functions, which are Hamiltonians for the group action. And they give WZW currents in this conformal field theory. This is sort of the quantum mechanical version of the statement that P is del over del W. Here, the momentum is what's called the Higgs field. In other words, if you try to describe this boundary condition by a Lagrangian submanifold in the Hitchian moduli space, which is not the semi-classical description, you would say it's a is a Lagrangian submanifold defined by solutions to this equation. So this is sort of a semi-classical. And I think I described it in the previous talk, or perhaps in the string math talk. Anyway, so if you think in terms of incomplete structure B, you don't want to think about the modules, just you want to think about classical Lagrangians in a Hitchian moduli space, you would just study this problem. You take some Zs, the Zs are sections of M tensor K to the 1/2, so mentioning they are spinners. You look for homomorphic sections of this bundle, and then you find the Higgs field of this form. This is the Lagrangian submanifold in the space of Higgs bundles. But that description is going to fail whenever there are singularities. Right? It's not a complete mathematical description. Complete mathematical description should be a D-module of some sort, and the D-module will come out of the conformal blocks for this. And you see, this integral has much in common with integrals of this sort. If you want to do a finite dimensional version of that integral, you would do something like an integral of phi m of x phi, where m is some matrix that depends on this parameter x. This sort of the finite dimensional version of a del bar. And then as long as M has no zero mode, has full rank, your D-module will be something pretty one-dimensional and stupid. But whenever this has zero modes, interesting stuff will happen. I cannot say that I understand that I'm familiar with manipulations of these D-modules. But I think that there are a lot of people in the world which understand very well how to define the derived conformal blocks of a simple free for a beta gamma system. So that should be a mathematically rigorous definition of an object in these categories attached to this boundary condition. Now, on the BBB side, the answer is also pretty straightforward. On the BBB side, we're essentially looking at functions on the Derham cohomology. Of forms on C valued in M. What do I mean with that? I mean, I want something that can be coupled now to a flat connection. The flat connection for G. I can take forms that are sections. I can use this flat connection to define a del bar and del operators, and to define a del operator, really. Okay. And I can just do cohomology of this for forms on C. This will give me a sheaf on the space of flat connections, which should be the BBB brain attached to this boundary condition. This, but said like this, this looks like pretty abstract and somehow very different from what I had here, because here I
And I think it's known that the conformal locks of these fermionic currents would use something.
I'm sorry, did your remote, your lovely just turn off?
Sorry? I think the power might have. The battery light has been red for a while. I don't know if that is what you're referring to.
I'll be there in 2 seconds.
What should I do about it? Any questions off the record? Yes. Indeed, this could be. Oh, okay. And second, wait for the punchline. For the punchline. Should we go? Thanks.
Yep, should be good.
So, okay, the punchline is that I have a following conjecture, which seems to be true, that for any three-dimensional theory, even more complicated than this, with boundary gauge fields or whatever else you want, in these theories you can find some vertex algebra with a property that the conformal blocks of that vertex algebra give you the data. Give you either. See, there is this beautiful fact. If you have a vertex algebra which has a WSW symmetry, it gives you a D-module on band G. If it has a global symmetry, which is not a WSW symmetry, it gives you a sheaf on the local systems, on the flat connections for that automorphism. So in general, for any theory which has some Higgs branch symmetries, some Coulomb branch symmetries, I would hope to find a vertex algebra which has these WSW symmetries and these as automorphisms. And then the conformal blocks for that will give you something which are both D-modules on some band G or sheaves on spaces local systems. And can be used to produce the corresponding data for the geometric Langlands duality. So I've been only experimenting for some very simple examples, but something that I find very, very nice is that I have a certain prescription for how to compute the vertex algebra for gauge theories, for the representation of the gauge group. The TSUN theory has a description, a Lagrangian description, although it only manifests an abelian subgroup of the Coulomb branch symmetry. I can write the vertex algebra for that, and it has this U1 to the n minus 1 global symmetry, but magically it gets enhanced to SUN at the end of the calculation.
So for the TSUN, it looks like it should be a gamma system of 5, right?
It's more complicated than that, because that one will only know about the Higgs branch.
Oh, so you have something for the
symmetry. It has extra stuff that knows about the Coulomb branch that is acted upon by the Coulomb branch symmetries.
I suppose I was wondering if.
No, I don't know. I don't. There definitely should be some relationship between this and the beta gamma flag manifold. but I know it's not quite clear to me what it is. So this is more, seems more complicated. In a sense, the so it has W coherence, which correspond to the functions on the flag manifold, generators of the function of the flag manifold. But it also has other currents, W algebra generators, which are acted upon by the column branch symmetry. Somehow they, anyway. So just by looking at very simple examples here, I can. So I'm not very good at computing conformal blocks of vertex algebras at the moment, but at least for some very simple abelian examples, I can do the calculation, and you get do pairs of objects which in the abelian, which should be related by the abelian geometric Langlands duality, and I think it would be nice to verify that these are indeed related by the Fourier Mukai transform. I think I'm pretty close to that, but not quite there. And then even for non-abelian situation, you can find certain examples that could be checked. Okay. Any question?
Say a little bit more about the prescription from writing down this 3D n equals 4 theory to producing this.
Right, so if you have just hypermultiplets, this is the prescription of the BA side, this beta gamma system, valued in the representation.
How did you sort of decide that?
There's an answer that I don't know, like in a certain twist, as a value condition, when these are the.
That's right.
And you know how to do the operators.
Yes. If you add boundary gauge fields, you need to take a coset of this. And now we need to try, you know, there is a question, that's my proposal at least, that you take a coset. There is an alternative proposal that seems to give the same answer, which is sort of a BRST reduction. Anyway, there is a certain algebraic operation you can do. To sort of remove the. Okay. So this will have some, there will be some 3D, some currents for the 3D gauge symmetry, and you want to remove them from the algebra. Intuitively, you're taking this vertex algebra and expanding it in representation of this WZW algebra, and only keeping the coefficient of the identity module. This will give you a new vertex algebra, which is supposed to be the result of the one associated for this three-dimensional gauge theory. On the BBB side, I don't know how to go beyond this. So I know how to do it for hypermultiplets, but I have no idea how to add gauge fields. This by itself will give you something like a sheaf on the Hitchin on the space of flat connection for this boundary gauge group. And then you will need to do something like take sections of that sheaf or something like that. But I don't know a vertex algebra interpretation.
There's also a twist and a boundary condition which uses this vertex algebra.
Yes. Yes, that's right. It should be possible.
You get the currents for a certain z-weighted algebra.
That would be, yes, okay. I would love to see it concretely for TSU2, for example, for TSUN. If that prescription is true, then that mysterious algebra will have to have an emergent WZW symmetry. Okay.